top with Giordano. Two on one. Michael Backlund shoots. Scores!
Penning. Great move. Here is Penning. Shot. Scores!
Comes free to Shane. Locked by Lucic. Ran him over.
And he wins it back to Foley. Scores!
No way! Oh, my! No way!
Kurt Fiddler backhand.
Oh, my!
It is. Now we're waiting.
Slides it in front, scores! Jason
Chimura! Checked in by Matthews, here it is, scores!
5 minutes into overtime, in game five, and McDavid scores! Game winner, series winner, for Connor McDavid!
I have been a murder man for all my life, and I'll be a murder man.
When you hire a contractor, you want things to go smooth.
Smooth as a driveway poured by Pete's Concrete.
You want a solid guarantee.
Solid as a basement floor by Pete's Concrete.
You want Pete.
Pete's Concrete. For sidewalks, patios, your leaky basement, Pete lays his reputation down with every job, and he offers you finishes and colors you won't find anywhere else.
You want someone who proudly puts their name on the work they do.
Pete puts his name in concrete.
Pete's Concrete.
Our NHL News and Notes segment is brought to you by Sheena Boychuk. Yes, you heard that last name right. That's Sheena Boychuk. As a licensed realtor, Sheena has you covered to buy and sell your home in this hot market. She also offers home consulting services to help you upgrade your living space. Check her website out at SheenaBoychuk.com and tell her the Two Mods Podcast sent you. Realty by Design, your design approach to real estate. Welcome back to the 2 months podcast presented by Pete's Concrete. I am your host, Joshua Marshall, and we have a very special guest. I know I always say that, but he is a longtime executive in the National Hockey League, a former coach in the OHL, and you can find him with on various Sportsnet channels, and you can find him on the NHL satellite radio with Steve Coulias and all the great guests that they have there. And this guy is a two-time Stanley Cup champion. He is Mike Fuda. Futes, how's it going?
Good, Joshua. Great to see you, my friend, back behind the, I guess you had Chris Cuthbert on recently, but it's great to see you back where you belong, behind your desk.
Yeah, you know what? It felt good. I did a good interview with Sonny Sakan last night, and he was recognized for the first Oilers South Asian Hockey Night. And I know that many other organizations have done that before, but it was the first one in Edmonton. And yeah, just finished up a good interview from with Chris Cuthbert that we'll release on Thursday. This interview with you will release later today on Wednesday. So, and again, thanks to you and everything you do, man. I went for a tea, just a little emotional, because I everything you do for us here at the pod is just tremendous. You are our biggest supporter, our biggest contributor, and adding that great guest list that we have, and all that is not possible without you. And you know, I know it was a kind of a bittersweet weekend. You know, it was great pictures that you posted of Amazing Grace Bowen, and would have been her 19th birthday, and you know, emotional in that. And you and I've talked about this off record too, and you know, but continue to hold her legacy up. You know, how special kind of was to emotional but special in a way of keeping her legacy going. Futes, how honored are you in that?
Well, that one caught me off guard, because now you got me
emotional.
it's one of the, you can't really put it into words, because, well, first off, my oldest daughter's turning 19 and my twins are 17. So at the same time, they were always in the same age bracket as Grace. And I still remember just seeing her in her little wheelchair with her foot on upside down. When she had her leg amputated, she had her foot reattached upside down with hopes of becoming a sledge hockey player, because that was her next dream because of her love for hockey. And it was all through Justin Williams in Coburg. And I mean, as I said, these NHL players that give their time and do this all the time, for me, kind of being like entrenched in the management and scouting side of things, I'd never really been exposed to that. I mean, I'd seen what they do as players, but I just fell in love with this little girl. And I think the feeling was reciprocated And I took her out on a couple of dates, went to the World Junior, took her parents out to places. And I had this dream of her dropping the puck. And I mentioned before, as at Staples Center at the time was before crypto, whatever it is now. And that night we made Justin Williams was the honorary captain. And it was funny because as fate would have it, we were playing Calgary and Mark Giordano was the captain for the other team. So when I see that picture of Grace dropping the puck and she had the place at the end of her fingertips and she went back and she succumbed to the disease. And I was asked to represent Justin and I delivered the eulogy along with Haley Wickenheiser. So for whatever I can do, and it's not like everybody, you know, because in today's world, there's a lot of different charities and they're all great charities, right? But I choose to kind of pour the majority of my time and energy with regards to whether it's jerseys or like, I know she's having her first annual golf tournament this summer, which I've already committed to being at. So she's just special and I can't help, but anytime anything kind of depressing or where real life throws you a pitch or something that you kind of start to feel sorry or, oh, woe is me, I think about her and how quickly she was taken away from us. Yeah. In that little picture, I stood seeing her in that open casket. With so much life left to give, and I had given her a little guardian angel necklace that she was wearing. She was a dream, and I've kept close with the family, and we do stuff every year together. But again, I think it brought Justin Williams and I closer to better than can ever imagine. But yeah, I thank you for bringing it up. Anything I do from a charity standpoint, I think she's got her own ward now at the hospital for sick kids with all the different people that have helped out. But she's a special lady, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, she definitely is. And, you know, great family. And you do an amazing job continuing her legacy and the smiles that she can bring to people's faces. And definitely missed. You know, it's tough. Like you say, life throws you different things here and there, right? And putting things in perspective, you know, so it's try to find... you know, share those good stories, but are also tough too. Like losing, you know, someone so special to you, it hurts a lot in a lot of ways. And, you know, we, with Chris Cuffert, we talked about, you know, look at the story that Ben Stelter brought to the hockey world too. Right. So, and Amazing Grace did that too. You know, and the connection Justin Williams has had, who was on with us before too, that you helped us get. And, you know, and obviously I Futes, you know, CC loves you. So there's a lot of great people out there in the game too, that continue to hold the Mike Futa flag of just great person and great individual. So
he's got that iconic voice, and it's like, it's funny. Cause I mean, if you close your eyes, you think of everything Canadian, that you call it, whether it's the Olympics or whether it's CFL or NHL. And for me, it was like, because our 2012 cup run, he
talked about this. Yeah.
He was undefeated, right? Like, yeah. It was almost like, and I was like, stupid me, it's like superstitious when you're not a player. Like, I mean, I was like doing different things on the treadmill that if I don't do this in the treadmill, we're not going to win tonight. It was like, oh yeah, okay. But anyways, that's just that superstitious side of you. And then every time I saw Chris Cuthbert, he was undefeated. And in fairness, we were on pretty good run there. We went up 3-0 in every series. So maybe the leverage that I would, and the rose petals that I was throwing towards Chris that kept all I know is we never lost a game when he was calling it. So he was my good luck charm from the media standpoint.
He did touch on that story actually. People will be able to hear that on Thursday. So yeah, obviously, you know, transition over to the NHL here, our NHL report, sponsored by Sheena Boychuk Real Estate, a great realtor here in the Edmonton area. So, and you know, Johnny Boychuk's that's his wife, and the career he's had, Johnny, and the Islanders are fighting. They're in the mix right now, and a tough hit last night that took a lot of you know, these teams play each other again here before the season's out, so we'll see if we have another line brawl in a different way. We had one with the Islanders, or with the Devils and the Rangers. Let's see if this transpires with the with the New York Islanders, who knows? But you know, they're in the fight. There's a lot of great playoff races right now. Which is the most intriguing to you? That kind of stands out to you, to seeing like who gets in and who might not get in. Is it the Penguins, because we kind of counted them out? They were like a 1.7% chance of making it not too long ago, and they're still in the fight. But where are you at with the playoff race?
We'd need to put it like a 4-hour package together. There's so many intriguing stories. Yeah. I wasn't too excited about there's a little bit more excitement now with the Eastern Conference, because for me, it was like a stationary bike race. It was like, if I was excited, I'd be one of the teams that's going to get one of these teams in the first round, because you see some of these incredibly maniacal matchups that are going to happen in the Western Conference. And again, in the top of the, in the Atlantic. And then you see certain of these teams that just can't seem to get out of their own way. Some of them that were sellers, I was down at the game against Pittsburgh the other night, and they're playing such a desperate brand of hockey, and to watch what Crosby's doing is absolutely asinine, how incredible it is. But they just seemed, for me, they seemed to be a little thin, like the drop off after their stars. They just don't seem to have the depth. And it's a nice story with Nedeljkovic coming in and playing the way he has. But again, it's almost a little bit like the Edmonton story, which I hate bringing up because I love Jack Campbell, but the guy that you've invested all your money in isn't the guy carrying the mail right now at this time of year. And it's a tough thing. Like even Tristan Jarry just hasn't lived up to his contract status. And again, I just think it's hard to weigh all that when you don't have, like, I always go back to 2012 when we had to go on a heater, and we did it at a time, I think it would have been the last 10 or 12 games, but we went in playing our best hockey. We were just on such a roar, and we had Jonathan Quick as well, right? And we could play you any, we were healthy, which is huge when you start to hear some of these names popping up that might be injured or in a Vegas situation, like you don't even know who's coming back and when they're coming back. The uncertainty that falls there with an Aiden Hill, we had all cylinders burning now. I look at the teams that are coming in now, and I just don't, there's still question marks in goal. The only team that seems to be having the same type of momentum is the Islanders, right? Because, and they've got Sorokin, who's capable of winning a game on his own as well. And they kind of can play a shutdown style, beach in the aisles. Not too many super, super stars, but enough good guys that they might give you a headache in the playoffs if they find a way in. And then there's the Patrick Waugh factor. But you look on the other side, like some of these teams, it almost looks like they burn their, like we were talking about Nashville, and it's almost like after they got in and got secure, they got to take a deep breath at the incredible run they went on, and now it's like they're trying to find their game again. And like Vancouver, you got so used to playing incredible hockey, knowing you've got Demko stand on his head, and now you've got to play without him. So there's so many factors with some of these teams that and I know I'm all over the place, but you just don't even know what roster you're getting come playoff time to analyze. And so they could, I was like, wow, look at that. Edmonton's going to play LA. Then it's like, wow, look at that. Vegas is going to play LA. There's so many different unseen circumstances. I guess the only note, it looks like the Leafs in Florida.
Yeah.
But they're all good scenarios. They're fun. But yeah. I mean, certain teams should feel a little bit more heat than others. But as I said, it's the best time of year when you're a hockey fan and when you're a hockey player, as long as you're on the right side of the cut line, and it should be a lot of excitement for everybody.
Yeah. So we're with Vegas, obviously a big game tonight here. We'll preview this game, Edmonton Oilers versus the Vegas Golden Knights. The last regular season game for Vegas on the road. Already reports that stolen skating and he's done another test, and the playoffs are right around the corner, so maybe he's on the ice for game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thomas Hurdle just played the other night in Vancouver, played around 20 minutes, looked good, played power play, played penalty kill. That was a big add for them. William Carrier's out, Pietrangelo's out with illness, but, they're going to get some of their bodies back. But if that's a matchup that the Oilers get and Vegas gets all their guys back, where are you at here with the Oilers versus the Golden Knights? Because this Evander Kane stuff is very intriguing to watch. And I know that some people are saying it's a part of the game and all that, but where there's smoke, seems like there's fire. And everything I'm hearing on him, I don't know where you're hearing on him, Feuds, but everything I'm hearing on him, isn't that well pleasant? And, he's blown my phone up, and not liking some of the things I have to say, but, I'm going with factual evidence here and I have the receipts to prove it. But, he could be really good for them in the playoffs, or he could really be bad too. So,
well, it would be a real shame if when you look at how hard they had to come back as a unit to make it a playoff after that horrendous start, if every kind of internal device was something of a downfall. Now, the one thing you talk about, what you can see, what you get with Evander Kane, is one thing is he's a unicorn, whether you like him or dislike him, what he brings to the table as a hockey player. Like, he's about as, I mean, when you talk about the, what's left of the gunslingers that can score, when you think of the Tom Wilsons, et cetera, there's not many of them. So a good version of Evander Kane, a happy version of Evander Kane, is somebody that can win a playoff game for you and physically help. He's got that body that doesn't break down, and he could be a huge part of any team's success. Now, what I'm seeing on the, because of the past history of, you know, questioning him as a teammate, and only his teammates would know that. I'm not a teammate, but from the outside, he has moved around, and there's always been this little trail of controversy that surrounds him. So what you see on the bench, these are, you know, with, between, first of all, it was with Dreisaitl, and then you see, you know, and you could obviously from the outside, you could say, who knows, maybe they're just arguing about the pregame meal or the postgame meal. Well, that's a crock.
Yeah.
Okay. There's something going on. And whether it's from an outside, it looks like, listen, we're getting pushed around physically, and you're the guy on this team that's supposed to, that can handle that, step up to the plate. And there's always that element too, that my old coach say, players only love you when you're playing. And when Evander Kane's playing in a top six role power play unit, you're kind of getting everything that you, that you're hoping to get out of him. And when you start to slide him down, he gets miffed with his ice time and his role, because he does have a lot more to give. But if you're consistently not bringing it and you're held accountable, sometimes the, you know, what you see is not the best version of what you can get. So long story short, they've played together as a group. We've seen what they can do like as an A team. So if they were to draw on somebody, I think either way, they're going to have a really tough series. But whether it's the Los Angeles Kings, who seem to have a way of, you know, there's a lot of question marks there too, but they can really, you know, and the Oilers have had their number, but every game seems to be a little bit closer. They've shown the ability with that 1-3-1 to frustrate some of the speed of the Oilers. And then when you look at Vegas, I think at least the one thing we can say is that as much as we were, and I certainly was, you know, here we go again with Vegas. God, McCrimmon's brilliant. Look at this. Now, you know, clearly the captain's going to come skating out of the gate, and Hurdle's going to, you know, be a huge addition and stuff like that. They are so banged up that I think they're going to have to rely on some of that incredible chemistry they have and the ability they know they won together. Like the other one that's quietly not around is Aiden Hill, right? And then you see Logan Thompson get carted off the ice in practice. You know, he's back, but that defense healthy should be a real problem for anybody in a playoff series. But if you can allow Stone and Hurdle to kind of just get some chemistry, like it's just too big of a show. It's too big of a dance stage to just throw everybody out for the first time and hope there's chemistry when your opponent is the Edmonton Oilers or teams that have consistently shown they can do it all year. So there's lots of pressure everywhere. And you just to think and fathom that either the Edmonton Oilers or the Vegas Knights could be out in the first round just has a bad taste altogether.
Yeah, but Colorado or Winnipeg, if those two.
Very possible. Oh, yeah, Colorado, Winnipeg. Like, I've got my early pool. I had Colorado and Carolina Stanley Cup final, and they both, as much as I love both teams, they could both be gone in the first round. It looks like Carolina's probably going to get a softer touch. But there's no soft touch in the play. I mean, just a better matchup. I think soft touch is a tough one. There's teams that you really should not be lose to in a 7-game series based on your larger picture in the regular season. But anything can happen in the playoffs, and there's always an injury or a play or some luck along the way that changes everything drastically.
Yeah. What was your take on, you know, when you were in the league there, you know, looking at Matthias Ekholm and, you know, watching him now, and you know, you've seen a lot of these great players in the National Hockey League. It almost seems like this Matthias Ekholm that the Oilers have now is like shades in a way of the Chris Pronger that was here when they went to the Cup final. Like what he's done on this back end and solidifying everyone in the right roles. You know, can you talk about, you know, the intangibles that
guy brings? I mean, it's a tip of the hat to the group. I mean, the pro scouts and the staff in Edmonton to identify somebody like that. To come in and be able to play that kind of throwback warrior style. Now, Chris Pronger, that's a little bit of a – Chris Pronger would have like – he's in a different echelon of, they don't make Chris Prongers anymore. And he'd be suspended 20 games of Brigham Knight just per shift, the way he played the game, which is why we all loved Chris Pronger. So no, but this is again, in today's National Hockey League, Ekholm is an invaluable piece. I still think if they could roll it back at Edmonton, you know, completely, when you see what they have, I think they would, just like Toronto, I think everybody should have taken a little bit, and maybe they did. This is the other thing. I just felt at the time that Tanev was such a huge need for a couple teams, and Dallas being one of them too, that I would have found a way to find my way to get my hooks into somebody like that. And I know there were some people in the hockey world down on him at his game with Calgary closer to the deadline, said, do you really want to pay this much for Chris Tanev? And yeah, you do. And I just think it's Edmonton, there's just a name, and I'm sure they were in on it, so it's not like they, you know, this is something new to them, but I think they've left themselves an injury, or maybe just depth wise still a little short on the back end for the kind of run that's necessary to win a playoff.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing, when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights, like scratching Zach Whitehorse and the healthy one, like, I mean, that's depth. And that's competition now, because you've got guys like Hag and him battling. You can't take any off nights, and it's incredible how they match up lefty-righty as well, with, I guess, them and probably Carolina are the best depth, kind of Baskin-Robbins, and then they're all a little bit different, all a little different flavor, all taste really good, but they play together. They match up really well, those two defense cores.
Well, that pairing of Nick Hag and Zach Whitecloud were unbelievable in their cup run, right?
Like, won a cup. They won a cup, and right now one of them is out of the lineup every night.
Yeah. And it's like, that is almost like a top four defense, not your, and that to them was their bottom pairing defense, and some other teams that could be your you know, your third and fourth.
That's why I talked, Josh, like going the other night, as much as it was amazing to watch what the Penguins are doing and stuff, like after the Letang Carlson kind of guys leave the back end, you kind of got to Google some guys.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're good NHL players, but when you're trying to go on the kind of run they have with kind of not quite sure goaltending, it makes a real daunted task. And that's why even our beloved Leafs here, I love what they're doing, and they're playing great, and they're doing with injury, and everybody's getting in, they're playing tougher. You know, it looks like Samsonov's found a game, but they still internally, they're not sure who their six are to start the playoffs.
They're not, yeah.
Either be injury, whether it's Edmondson, obviously they're just resting him as an older guy, but it also tells you an older guy, they're more, when they start to play that physical style, it catches up to their body in a hurry a lot quicker, right? So it'll be interesting. And now Giordano come back, and he looks like he's got something to prove, and it'll be really interesting to see what the Yahtzee Cup rolls out from Sheldon Keefe on the back end there.
Yeah. Well, you can't count Giordano out, right? Like, obviously it went through a tough passing in his father, and then came back, had a game, and then the next game had a concussion. And since he's been back in the lineup, he's been a difference maker for them. And he's the oldest player in the National Hockey League right now.
You know what I think of him, but I struggle with him. Yep. To start the series against the Florida Panthers, which is going to be a gunfight, any version of the six that doesn't have Mark Giordano in it to start is the wrong version.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. So that'll be tough. And obviously, Tillithmi Liljegren, who's been out, talk of him coming back, but he hasn't had the greatest playoff success before. So I don't know where that pairing goes. Like, is he with Edmondson, who kind of plays the physical touch, and Liljegren?
These guys are so talented, Joshua. If I was a Leaf defenseman, I would spend every ounce of my off time learning how to shoot right.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, change that stick over, right? So and how crazy was that, the guy that Kyle Dubas brought in the other night, Jake McCabe is the guy that cost the Penguins that extra point in the overtime where he got the goal. So that trade's obviously worked out for the Toronto.
There's the old squirrel nut theory.
Yeah. So some
good. How about the guy that you brought in that's leading the Nashville Predators to the, you know, along with Luke Shen?
Yeah.
How about the guy that he let go that scored? Yeah, they had 50 pucks in Edmonton. So
Yeah, there is, and he has a longer list.
That Jake McCabe trade. I'm sure that's not the first one the Leafs are going to bring up when they think about what got away and the assets that are gone. But anyways, I love Jake McCabe. So you're right. That's kind of the dirty and mucky kind of player they need, and that kind of game is going to transfer to the playoffs as well.
Yeah. You go to these games. You're in Toronto. Like as a Leaf fan too, like obviously it was funny. Maybe you preps Chris Cuffert note telling him that I was a Leaf fan because I said it, and he's like, "Actually, I heard you are." So I don't know if you told him.
I didn't say anything. All you have to do is listen to a podcast.
Yeah. So maybe he already listened to some. But yeah, it was just intriguing to see what the year they have. Obviously, Matthews with 66 goals, he's got inching closer to 70. Nylander is not going. He has not kind of been the same player since his contract's been signed. So there's been a drop off in his totals, but he's still on the pace to getting the 100 points, and you know it's still a huge accomplishment. Marner coming back. I think it's crazy because at the start, even we talked about it, Chris Cuffert is just with Domi and Bertuzzi, and now they're working out. I know you speak very highly of Brad Treliving, but some of these moves that were questions at the start aren't questions anymore. And then maybe the story of the year is Ilya Samsonov, and he'll probably be the game one starter. But the Leafs,
he will be.
Yeah,
you're right about. I mean, that's another one that's a pat in the back to them. I mean, unfortunately, they got rid of some good goaltenders, but he's been outstanding. I mean, he kind of, after the whole Jack Campbell thing, and then he came in and to fall off as crazily as he did. I mean, it's almost, I talked to Spot, Peter DeBoer and Steve Spot too, because like Ottinger arguably was one of the best players in the playoffs last year. And he lost himself too this year. Like it was crazy to watch, and now he's got it back, but very similar take to Samsonov and not just get it back, but to look like he was elite the other night against Pittsburgh, like elite. So it'll be interesting if you don't have to worry about that position. Like, I mean, we were so spoiled, right? You just close your eyes and Jonathan Quick appears, right? So yeah, we were spoiled, but we had Martin Jones standing on his head, and we had Jonathan Bernier. So we had solid 1Bs who had either been 1As or on the way to be 1As. So it's such an important position. And I think there's got to be a little bit of doubt creeping in a little bit with, I know he's been out a long time, but the Samsonov has definitely put himself ahead of Wall. Like they were such a big, well, when Wall comes back, it's his net. Well, Samsonov's not giving the net up. So it's been something to watch. But again, you just see these teams that have this, and maybe it's because it's Toronto, but you can say again, and we can sit here, Josh, and say nothing that happens in the regular season matters. And we say this every year with the same team, but then something comes along that really makes it matter. Like, you know what? What Austin, it's not even fair to the hockey traditionists to say that what Austin Matthews isn't doing doesn't matter. It's absolutely magical to see this guy look, making 65 look easy. Like, so that's magical. So that does matter. Now, I wouldn't want to injure him trying to pursue it, because everybody that is going absolutely crazy chanting MVP at whatever they call it, Scotia Place, if they roll into Florida and come back down 0-2 or the same ghosts are haunting, those people will WWE turnstile, heel turn, and that place will turn into a zoo of booze. And there's just such an expectation that this team will be judged based on its playoff performance, bar none. But again, they've made it's the regular. They've made it special what he's done. It's been mad. But again, rightfully so, this team needs to have success. What I will say is if they can be healthy, Brad Treliving, who would not give two fiddlers about what people thought early in a trade, because it takes a long time to get yourself back in the saddle and the chemistry side, that those guys right now, Bertuzzi looks like he's ready to play playoff hockey. Max Domi looks really comfortable. Mitch Marner doesn't look as comfortable, but he's been out a long time, and he always seems to get thrust in the, we can win without Mitch Marner kind of thing, which I think they cannot. Yeah. But I would be shocked if somewhere in the playoffs early, he's not back on the wing with Austin Matthews.
So let's move over to the Washington Capitals. Ovi gets 30 goals, 18 years getting that, at least 30 goals. First player in NHL history to do that. But minus 40 goal differential. Now, Spencer Carberry and Mitch Love are friends of our podcast, so we're going to be supporting them and cheering them. They're in a playoff spot right now. Charlie Lindgren is doing an amazing job. Speaking of a goaltender that's getting a lot of money, and Darcy Kemper, who's just sitting on the bench, talking about earlier with you know, Tristan Jarry and you know, obviously Jack Campbell and whatnot. But what do you make of what the Caps been doing, and should Spencer Carberry get coach of the year if the Caps get in?
I no, he shouldn't. I think he's done a wonderful job. Okay. But I mean, that team right now is like the Knights. They grind out wins. It's unbelievable how they're winning games. So yes, he should be given huge applause for the job they're doing, the fact they're in it. And then Ovi, just when you're that kind of scorer, you can't be caged for that long before doing the job he's done. But when I look at that roster, like when they lose, still, even in the midst of this, when they lose, they don't screw around. They take a rage slap in the chin. Like,
yeah.
They go out down by like 5 or 6 Cobb. It's not like they're and then they go in, but they're beating teams that they need to beat, which other teams just seem at this time of year, like that's the one thing the Leafs in the past haven't done down the stretch, is like when they get on a run and they go into a place like New Jersey that's banged up, you know, and Hughes is out and this is out, and they go in and they still get their points. They don't fall lower than the talent level that they're playing. It'll be really interesting down the stretch here with Washington. Their schedule, I mean, I think I saw they've got a couple games against teams they're up against. I think we're done with the Crosby. I think we're done with the Crosby Ovechkin for the year head to head.
Yeah,
it's a great story, but again, it's not one I look at the teams. I look more because it's great that Washington kind of is a veteran team. You kind of think they were going to be in it anyways. I look more at like Philly, Detroit, teams that were, you know, really kind of had us hoodwinked all year that they'd made that next step towards, you know, across the ladder. And to see like Philly right now, and I know you said you want to talk about it, like I'm a huge Torts fan, but I mean, I think there's a lot of self-inflicted wounds in how Philly's got to where they've got, to what they've become. And like to go into a place like Montreal when it's a must win and 9-3. Like 9-3.
Is it safe to say the season was lost when Sean Couturier was a healthy scratch after 34 days?
It didn't help. And we'll only know again, because you don't know. And he's done such a magical job with this group, getting them playing. And you can tell guys like when he starts talking about it, that's why I laugh when they were like the Leafs once again, like that, well, we got to get Konechny at the deadline. Well, when Torts talks about Konechny, TK or whatever he calls him, you can see the glow in his eyes that he loves this guy, and that's the type of player he wants to build a team around. Now, what it just doesn't make any sense to me is, why would you name this guy captain if you had any doubts about what you were getting? So there had to be, and I don't know whether it was okay, you know, and it's all speculation. It just doesn't make any sense that you make a veteran guy say, this is the kind of guy that, you know, we want to, like his public comments on him, where this is going to be our guy, and then to publicly, basically, you know, just pilfer him with the healthy scratches and have it all almost like this is his fault. It was brutal. And then his referral, the one thing you can't get over the fact is, you know, whatever, Carter hurt, you know, self-inflicted wound, but like the goaltending has been just terrible, right?
Erson is just, he's tired, right?
So, well, he's exhausted, and it's not from, again, as Torts would say, they're trying, but at this type of year, when you have a young team, you need somebody that you can just look back, and the nights that were exhausted, he's going to make that save. And now, you know, they bring in the big Russian, and then he was all over the flopping all over that last, like his last loss, like just, yeah. NHL goalies aren't supposed to bite on a stick handle move that much, where you almost feel like you're sliding right out of the net. And whether he's going to be good or not, I hope they get to him and he turns out. But I mean, this type of game with this type of pressure, it takes a special type of player to come in and keep your team afloat. There's still games left, but I mean, that's one. Even last night, I was like, I got to watch Torts. I got to stay up and watch what Torts says after this one. And even he, it was like, he couldn't do it again. He couldn't say that we embarrassed the Flyer jersey and, you know, all the stuff that he's been saying constantly. That's embarrassment. And these guys, is not whether they can't, some of them just will never be able to do it. And those kind of comments that have to just eat and wear at you. He just basically came out and said, you know, we were good early and then it snowballed and the wheels fell off. And then he kind of didn't, he didn't rip on anybody other than a little bit himself, but he had to be just shaking his head going, where did this thing go? How did we go from this team that has consistently all year put themselves in a playoff position? He didn't want to acknowledge it, but they kept doing it. Every time you thought they'd fall off, they'd win a few and put themselves right back in that spot. And now you're looking at, they're on their, they're looking up at Pittsburgh, Washington, you know, Detroit, who's another team that you just never know on a nightly basis what you're going to get. But it'll be an interesting off season because there's certain things that you can't just solve. Right. This isn't a, this captain isn't a UFA, right? He's got term and a lot of money, and it's just not a comfortable feeling watching what's going down there. But kudos on the season they've had. But this is one that, this is one you almost wish that you were picking a, you had a great pick coming up and you're feeling great about the draft. There's just nothing but a sour taste when you think about what's going on in Philly right now because of how much they've accomplished, and now they're going to, looks like they're going to be on the wrong side of the cut line, not have that high pick. There's just so many things that are going to make you as a manager, coach, player, lose sleep when it comes to an end. It's just, it's unfortunate.
Yeah. And you hope, like, they're a good market. They drive a lot of money in the NHL, the Philadelphia Flyers, and, you know, we'll see what the Caps can do too. But, you know, we had all these teams out, so at least we're getting some races here. We'll see if Detroit gets in. Obviously, Steve.
I love to see the Red Wings. It's just that same. You talk about it. Like, there's something iconic about if it's a team that's not, you know, Pittsburgh's been there, done that. Everybody's pulling for Sidney Crosby. But like Detroit and Philly, those are like iconic teams that it's almost like you miss them. Yeah. You didn't miss them when the Red Wings were winning every year. But it's almost like, come on, we need these guys back in. This is hockey town. Again, it's unfortunate. I mean, you hold on to Patrick Kane, you clearly feel that you got a shot at this thing.
Yep.
Right. And, yep. And it just hasn't kind of worked out the way they'd hoped. So hopefully what I'd just like to see in the next four games out of these teams that somebody run into those two spots. Please don't just all four of you moonwalk
in. Yeah.
And who's the last team?
Fight in. Yeah, like win them outright, you know.
And let the math fall where it is, but not just have a bunch of teams finish 1-3 and then you got to calculate who has the best regulation wins or something. Like,
yeah, we don't want to see that at all. Matt Rempe, you got to meet him in Toronto. You're smiling as soon as I say the name. Can you talk about your interaction with him and what you think of what he's done so far in his early parts of his NHL career and what that whole fiasco was too? Because Curtis McDermott is a guy you know very well too. So, and how
well it's become. I love that aspect of the game. I love the talk of, I love the fact that they're taking headshots out of the game and the hits from behind. And, but this, the fighting part of it, especially because all these guys would, at least for the most part, like Ryan Reeves is playing good hockey now. These guys have to be able to play. Right. And, it was funny because I was down with Jonathan Quick, standing outside the dressing room with Kenny Reed and I wanted to meet him. I mean, obviously, and he came out and it was like, Laviolette was walking him out and I just asked quick, he called him over and he's just massive for one thing. Like that guy, Curtis McDermott is a big man. Like Curtis, when he takes a shirt, looks like a pro wrestler. I used to watch Curtis McDermott rollerblading down the Manhattan Beach Strand. And it looked like an old, like if anybody walked out with a dog or anything, it would look like a scene from The Naked Gun. There would be just people flying everywhere because he had his headset on and it was like this machine coming down the Strand. So when you picture this guy, the best scenario, I felt like a skinnier version of Paul Heyman.
Oh, Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman walking as guy out to the room. You're staring this guy right in the sternum.
Yeah.
Like he's just massive. And plus he's got that showered hair down over and he's got two massive shiners. So he does look like the Undertaker, but he was friendly. He just, yes, sir. No, sir. I'm great to meet you, sir. And then you know, he put his hand around and you can feel your whole body kind of drop when he comes down. So it's amazing what he's doing. And I mean, I think he felt a little embarrassed. I think he felt a little embarrassed by the non-reaction that he had in Jersey, whether with Jersey after the hits, and then especially the waving at McDermott. I think he took it to heart and he put himself right back up there. Like Curtis was not afraid to say, no, that's the kind of that you have the respect for. Now it'll be, as you said, at some point, like, I personally think the guys that said that Jersey Ranger game didn't matter. It really mattered, right? It brought the Rangers together. I mean, I didn't think all of them were going, those guys they were all battling for each other.
Yeah.
Right. Now you look at, I don't know what you can do now. You mentioned the
island,
the pellets hit. I mean, it's getting late in the season that the last thing you need to find out is Jacob Trouba broke a knuckle, you know, as the fourth fight at the same stoppage of play, trying to get momentum on a pellet hit on Zibanejad. You got to be smart about this, but I do think it's good for the game. And I think it's good for these teams. You can't tell me when you watch the Toronto bench, when Reeves has been going lately, they're in heaven. Yeah. I mean, they're it's like, wow, this guy, he's got our back, right? He's got our back. And they haven't had that element in a long time. Now it'll be interesting again, I guess, like neither of them played last night. I guess Toronto, I always look at the dates now just to see. So Toronto's got Jersey again, whether McDermott and Reeves play that game, who knows?
Well, there could be something there, because obviously McDermott, I wouldn't say he took a run at Matthew Knies, but that was
Curtis isn't taking runs at guys and trying to finish checks. There's not a hell else going on out there with it, yeah. Especially when they have them up front. But it'll just be interesting, because right now it's so critical to stay healthy for these teams that are in. So you got to be careful about that aspect of it, but you also don't want to give anybody any chips. Like, you've got Toronto going into Florida. And I know when Florida came in a week ago or whatever, Paul Maurice went out of his way to say, nobody's going to remember what happened tonight 2 weeks from now, which is, that's why I guess you get 865 wins, because that's crap. Yeah. That's like saying, okay, when Toronto goes into Florida with three games or two games later in the regular season, and that it's not going to matter to them what happens in that game, knowing that's your first round opponent. Every ounce of momentum that you can gain is a critical inch, yard, whatever. So that's going to go into that. That's going to go into a game like that.
Yeah.
So it'll be exciting seeing those matchups down the stretch. And again, it just comes back to, well, I forgot, I bring up the Oilers and whoever their opponent is. I come up to, I don't include Vancouver because it's been magical, but they've been magical. That's why for me, when you bring up your Spencer and stuff like that, I go, Rick Tocchet just took this team from, like, they're not even a playoff team to potential, winning the banner for best in the league. So that to me separates yourself from a coach of the year standpoint. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they struggled in the playoffs because they just haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
Because they haven't been there yet. Whereas, I mean, you look at whoever the Leafs get, there's going to be a team that's expecting to win the Stanley Cup that's out in the first round. That's where I look at it and go, wow. And that's going to be the same case whoever Edmonton gets, because Los Angeles claimed themselves Vegas is the defending champ, and LA claimed they are right from the beginning. Luke Robitaille said, this is a team that's, we're one of few teams ready to compete for the Stanley Cup, and they're a great team. So they should be in that mix. And then you brought it up, what Winnipeg's done. And again, there would be another coach of the year candidate in my case, because of what Bonus and even when he's been away, the way the team's produced, those guys have kind of separated them from teams that it would have been hard to say quietly. They were probably saying, we really got to make the playoffs. And now they're like, wow, we're Stanley Cup contenders, right? So Colorado and Winnipeg in the first round, one of those teams going home after the year they've had, man, there's going to be some nail biting over the next little bit.
There will be, for sure. I like it. I like the races. You know, we got something here to look forward to in these last 2 weeks, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Getting old, Joshua. The only thing that's killing me is these friggin', and maybe it's this healthy lifestyle I'm trying to incur. These late night games are absolutely killing me. I used to love knowing when I fell asleep in the West Coast in Los Angeles, there was nothing left that was going to intrigue me to put my television on to watch.
Yeah.
And now every, it's like, oh, 10:30. Suck it up. Got to watch the boys.
A 3-hour difference.
The morning comes and you're like, oh.
Yeah. No, I hear you because, obviously, yeah, I work in BC, live in Alberta, so obviously my main income is a journeyman carpenter. So when I'm at work for 2 weeks, you know, where I'm watching these games, and I'm like, I'm ready. I got to go to bed because I got to get up at 4 a.m.
So. Well, I'll find out for sure because there's games I want to watch on Thursday night, and I told you Paul Bissonnette's got me coming into
Minnesota, right? So
this has got me coming into Minnesota with the to meet the Spit and Chicklets crew. So I get a weekend with Biss, Colby Armstrong, Murrells, and I guess I get to meet Witt. So
yeah,
everything seems to start a little early in their world.
Yeah. I got a funny story about Witt, but I don't know if it's a podcast story. It's
and save it. Yeah, I don't want to get in trouble before I actually meet. No,
exactly.
These guys, there's so
actually
much
nothing fun bad. To, it's so nothing bad to, about him. It's
no, there's so much fun to watch and be. I mean, obviously, I've got a special relationship with Biss. I've become much closer with Colby, but I mean, you see their stuff and their following, and it's like, so I'm thinking, you know, I'm used to going on a road trip and thinking, okay, I got to pack a suit. And, yeah. And now I'm like, I don't know what the heck. I think the only thing I'm probably going to have to pack is 5-hour energy drinks, which my daughters have sworn me off of. And just thinking, like, the flight leaves at like 5:30, which I'm like, okay, that's a problem. Like, in the morning, like, who wakes up? Even Bissonnette, like, that's before the rooster is still napping. So that's going to be crazy. And then I got to go, he's got like a bottle signing, a Pink Whitney bottle signing Friday afternoon. And then it's a meet and greet with the Chicklets group. So I don't even know if I'm talking to anybody about hockey.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. All I know is my flight home Sundays again. Like, yeah. I'm sure there was not a flight at 11 o'clock in the morning. I think I leave at 7 o'clock. So
yeah. Anyways. That'll be a lot of fun anyway. So we'll be catching that on social media fronts for sure. So see you there. Let's finish up on this. Obviously, some big news. We'll leave it for the end as we do. But, you know, Frank Cervalli reported earlier today from Daily Faceoff that the NHL is drafting up a schedule for the Arizona Coyotes to either play in Arizona next year or a chance of or that team moving over to Salt Lake City, Utah, home of Trevor Lewis, friend of the pod and a great friend of you. Actually, Trevor Lewis is one goal away from 100 in his national hockey career. I think he's sitting on 99 career NHL goals.
Somebody will hit him in the shin pad before this season's
out. Yeah, he's got all the rest of the games at home. So I'll see if he gets it at crypto.com arena, but it'll be pretty sweet to watch that. You know, the potential of obviously the end of this road for Arizona in Arizona might be coming. I know Elliot's talked about there's a chance that maybe they come back sometime later on. They don't want to give up on that market. Obviously, it's an arena issue. We'll see what Javier Gulidarius kind of sees and what he wins in. But, you know, where are you at with the Coyotes? You know, it's tough. Obviously, this is a tough kind of conversation to even have because there's livelihoods at stake here with people that are, you know, that work for that organization too. And then players that have actually signed contracts to play in Arizona, you know, would that carry over? It would carry over to the new city, but would they want to play there too? But your thoughts on this whole entire situation?
First of all, it's the National Hockey League, so yes, they'd want to play there. Arizona for me has always been like, I loved it, like, right? I mean, be coming in because of the weather, because it was cool, because when they played at the old arena, you'd have such a, other than it was like a 45 minute bus ride from your charter to the rink itself. Once you were there, I mean, you know, the hotel was right there. The weather was great. You had your little, so I think there is a market for, and just Shane Doan would say, when we played them in the semifinals, that place was hopping. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's that potential, but I think it's run its course. I mean, I've met the ownership group vis-a-vis through the interview process. And I mean, I know they're passionate about it, but the reality of it is, enough's enough. This is the National Hockey League. I mean, you're going in to watch. I'm going in to watch the Kitchener Rangers and the London Knights play in buildings that have more seats,
more fans and stuff, yeah,
than fans. So to try and charge NHL dollars to watch in a rink that you could save for fun. That's why they play NHL exhibition games in seats like in places like that, to give people that close up experience. And usually teams don't send their entire regular season roster because those players don't want to play in a 5,000 seat rink in an exhibition game. And it's one of those events that you look at and tip your cap to have to play your entire season. And for me, from the outside looking in, I've heard it's an amazing atmosphere, but it doesn't even look sold out. It looks like they've got some pretty cagey looking camera angles just to make it look like there's 5,000 people there.
Correct.
So all you end up getting is you get teams like the Leafs that have 4,000 people that will travel, and it turns into what I thought Vegas was kind of going to be like, and that's totally not been, where people plan their vacations around going to watch their favorite team play. So you kind of lose the home crowd advantage. Long story short, the National Hockey League is what it is because of what it is. And it's untouchable with regards to being the best product, the best classiest, the best structures. And it matters to have a facility that isn't up to par. It matters for the road team, and it matters for the home team. So whether it's Utah, whatever, to go to a place that's going to be magical, it's going to be packed, and then take time to sort it out. I mean, we came back to Winnipeg. It's not, I mean, we're talking about, you know, Atlanta having another crack at it, or, you know, Minnesota, you came back to Minnesota. So why can't you get your ducks in a row and get a proper building and then look at bringing a team back down the road? Because it is a beautiful place to play and live, but this is enough's enough. You can't go through another year playing in front of 5,000 people or not in that kind of facility, in my opinion, especially when there is an incredible option available with all the bells and whistles that you need to have a successful organization. And I'm sure players would be absolutely wide open to that.
Yeah.
Again, even if you're a free agent, I'd have to struggle thinking that a free agent isn't outweighing the weather and the lifestyle in Arizona as opposed to going there to win, right? Because it's such a beautiful climate and stuff like that. And it is a fun place to live and raise a family. I do think you mentioned people losing their jobs. I think that Bill Armstrong has done a good enough job that I would hope that he gets an opportunity, if it does move, to continue on the momentum that, I mean, they've got to make 1,000 picks in the next few rounds. I mean, I think that I would hope it's not just, hey, the new owner's got, and that's part of the business. Sometimes the new owner has a new hockey operations staff that he's, but I would think in this case that Bill has done enough to deserve, if it moves. And I think he signed a very long contract too. So to give him a chance in a new surrounding, to continue working on the positive steps that he's already made with the organization.
Yeah. We'll keep an eye on it. And I think Elliot said this morning on the Jeff Merrick show that we might have a resolution to this before we really even thought it was. So it's not really shocking, because obviously,
well, if Elliot's saying that, you know what that means.
Yeah. So something's probably happening. Not new, because, you know, when we knew Atlanta was moving to Winnipeg, you know, there's two schedules drafted up for those.
The only thing that is a little bit new, and I've heard this and probably way too much time on my hand, it's amazing how much pride the league between Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, they keep this stuff internal, right? Like, you just never know. Like, they know, but it's such a huge thing. You never know who's interviewing. Like, the Ottawa thing, there's so much secrecy about who the next guy is going to be. And for this to be almost a little bit cart ahead of the horse, like talking about renaming the team and stuff. And this guy seems to be a little bit, I remember when Balsemi or whatever his name, that sounds like a vinaigrette dressing, but the guy that
Balsillie,
the guy that was doing it.
And you Blackberry.
He intended on moving the team to Hamilton without telling the league. And he got squashed like a grape before he could even get out of the gate, because the league doesn't do anything. It's like, even when Ottawa, the new owner, who's been awesome, he kind of got a little bit of his nose out of joint when they lost that pick right out of the gate, about not knowing about that.
Yeah.
When they were going for the sale.
Down off trade. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's little things. So it just, I'm sure internally, even if it's been decided, Gary's a little bit.
Well, something's intriguing, because Ryan Smith tweeted out yesterday, which it's not Ryan Smith the hockey player, it's Ryan Smith, the owner, that wants to bring the team to Salt Lake City, Utah. Just tweeted, what kind of names would be good if a team came here, right? So,
like, well, that's But I mean, that kind of thing.
Kind of what you're talking into.
Thing,
yeah.
That kind of thing, I could see Gary Bettman with like a taser sitting at home saying, every time he says something like that, he gets an electric jolt.
Yeah. Would you think he gets the approval by Gary to tweet that or no? Because he would have gotten the approval to speak to Jeff and Elliot on their podcast. You know, just like,
I just think he, if he has been, it's be a lot more generic than specific as he has.
Yeah.
Wanting to, but it is what it, I mean, I think at some point timing is of an essence. So they gotta have something in place here. And, but it certainly seems that he knows something that
not everyone might know too.
That everybody might know.
Yeah. Or might know. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll finish up on that. You know, appreciate your time here, Feuds. Always checking in on me and checking in on the others, and really appreciate everything you continue to do for us here at the podcast, and the relationships and the great community that supports hockey is awesome. And all the best. Have fun in Minnesota. Yes, obviously, you know, say hi. It'll be fun.
Yeah, hopefully you're not talking about me with a black armband on.
Yeah, exactly. We'll see what happens. UNRA might not be a good mix. We'll see. But no, you did good. It was nice to see you on game notes there with Merles and Army. And obviously, everyone knows how much Paul Bissonnette loves you, and you know, great people there. So at that podcast, so continued success, and looking forward to it. And we'll keep an eye on the social media channels and see if how viral maybe you go or don't go. We'll see. All right, take care, Feuds.
Appreciate it, bud.